there's so much that exists, both natural resources and others, and I think that's why we're so excited about working with MTP Connect and developing this Minds to Medicines report, because SA has the drive, the willingness, the infrastructure, the clinical excellence. There's great hospitals, great researchers, great natural resources that exist, and these hotspots that I mentioned earlier for radiopharmaceuticals are popping up all over the world. And I see no reason why Adelaide and SA could not come together and be really a leader in the space over the coming weeks and months and years.
Hello and welcome to the MTP Connect podcast. I'm Caroline Jewell. A new discussion paper from MTP Connect reveals how Australia is ready to play a leading role in the rise of the global pharmaceutical industry as advanced therapies drive significant investment and rapid expansion. Radiopharmaceuticals are precision nuclear medicines, and they're used for medical imaging and treatment, and they deliver targeted therapies for diseases such as cancer. With unique mining assets, innovative production methods and supply chain, a specialised workforce and a world-class research ecosystem with cutting-edge clinical services, the paper outlines a national roadmap to leverage advantages and address the challenges in laying the foundations of a successful radiopharmaceutical industry. To gain first-mover advantage, South Australia is identified as the ideal location for this Minds to Medicines revolution. So to find out more, we're going to talk to some of these South Australian experts in the radiopharmaceuticals ecosystem. And to kick this off, I'm speaking with Dana Bell, who's the Partnerships Director in MTP Connect's Adelaide Intermediary Program. Welcome, Dana.
Hi, Caro. Great to be on.
Thanks for coming on the podcast. What prompted the genesis of this discussion paper, Minds to Medicines?
Over 12 months ago, maybe closer to 18 months ago, we were working on a grant opportunity for national critical research infrastructure, which happened to be in radiopharmaceuticals. And the more we scratched under the surface, the more we realised this is a huge opportunity, not only for South Australia, also for Australia overall. So what started with a grant opportunity ended up in the creation of a discussion paper and mobilising stakeholders from all over the country.
So looking at the paper, which is now available on MTP Connect's website, the report consults widely with a large number of stakeholder groups. You undertook all sorts of research, roundtables, interviews. Why is it so important to canvass this whole ecosystem?
It's so important to canvass the entire ecosystem because we are building a radiopharmaceuticals ecosystem from the ground up. It's really important to engage the entire ecosystem because there is a huge opportunity for Australians and for Australia, including South Australia. And things are changing really quickly. Things are emerging in research. Treatments are closer to being commercialised and available for patients. There's a workforce that needs to be developed to sustain this rapid growth of the industry. So everywhere you look, people need to be aligned and mobilised so that we can get these incredible diagnostics and treatments to patients really quickly.
One of the interesting points raised in this discussion paper is that South Australia has this special sort of circular economy for radiopharmaceuticals. Maybe you could just share a little bit about that.
What's unique in South Australia is the end-to-end capabilities. And the reason that's important is in the manufacture of radiopharmaceuticals, we rely on countries outside of Australia, like Russia, the US and Japan, to be able to bring the materials eventually to patients. The mines that we have in South Australia have unique properties such that the waste can be processed and turned into medical use isotopes so that we have the sovereign capability in Australia and not having to rely on other countries for those raw materials. On top of that, South Australia is globally renowned for the research ecosystem, particularly early phase research, the beacon of the Royal Adelaide Hospital and other clinical services, and also from a workforce perspective, the Industrial Transformation Training Centre in Radiation Innovation has a really heavy presence in South Australia as well.
You talk about this radioisotopes that are used in medical treatments of this kind. The Tetium-177, this is one of those isotopes. It's currently only produced in Australia at ANSTO. Can we make our own advanced manufacturing industry here? Can we really make this happen?
That's a really exciting proposition, Caro, and I believe that we can. If we take that use case, lutetium 177, currently the raw materials are sourced from Russia and irradiated at ANSTO. Entex does have a use case where there is an alternate supply chain and manufacturing cycle such that the raw materials are processed from the waste of South Australian mines, and that can be then manufactured in Australia and not having to rely on overseas materials.
Well, yes, we're looking forward to talking to a number of the people involved in this type of activity in the podcast. In the discussion paper, it's obvious that we need to take some action soon if we want to take advantage of the opportunities, perhaps in the next 12 months. Can you give us an idea of the sort of things that we need to be doing here in Australia to capitalize on this opportunity?
Sure. And it's important to acknowledge that there are some incredible things that are already happening in Australia. And one of the things we found is, imagine if we harness and align all of those incredible things that are happening through a national coordinated approach, that will only accelerate what we're doing. Some of the key opinion leaders in this space have been working in this area for 10, 20, 30 years. So we are really fortunate to have a lot of incredible people and work that's already happening. The opportunity is to accelerate that. The immediate next steps that we're talking about, specifically in South Australia, is to develop a business case to really outline the strategy for moving forward. From that governance perspective, to convene a cross-departmental advisory committee and importantly have a really strong consumer and community voice in that. Also to provide some resources to continue this work. Thirdly, to appoint some key personnel to drive strategy. And lastly, to establish a radiopharmaceutical innovation accelerator. So we've already had some interest from industry and various stakeholders to contribute to an accelerator that will fast track the commercialization and translation of technology in Australia.
That's really exciting to hear that. There's some recommended actions for South Australia and Australia nationally to tackle some of the challenges and the issues that could limit the growth of this new sector. For instance, you know, we have 13 cyclotrons around Australia that produce radioisotopes. You know, is there an opportunity for further collaboration and coordination as part of that strategy? Can you share some light on what some of those national strategies might be for Australia?
You raise such a good point, because there are some national strategies that need to happen as well, which range from fast-tracking patient access to theranostics. So that is through the MSAT process most likely. So fast-tracking the reimbursement pathway for patient access. Then from a workforce development, mapping the future workforce needs for this industry, and then working backwards with where we have now and developing a strategy. Also, we're fortunate that at the moment we have some incredible grant programs and funding programs nationally, like the National Reconstruction Fund, MRFF, Australia's Economic Accelerator. Imagine if on top of that, there were some targeted rounds focused on radiopharmaceuticals industry development and research translation. That would be an incredible thing that Australia could do to fast track access to patients.
Interestingly enough, this report does cover that whole gamut and looks at some of the emerging cancer treatments that are coming through the system. And, you know, there is a demand for radioisotopes for preclinical research. And it also looks at what some of the Australian-born radiopharmaceutical companies are up to. Who should read this paper, Dana?
This paper was really developed for two key audiences: government and industry. So if we think about government, it's both state governments and federal government to understand the size of this opportunity and why we need to act now. And secondly, it's a signal to industry as well, especially when it comes to multinational companies or companies looking at where they're going to invest in commercialising and investing in infrastructure. We don't want Australia to miss the boat. We want industry to invest in Australia so that it benefits not only patients and people living in Australia, but also for those economic benefits.
So, Dana, what are some of the next steps now that the paper has been released?
In many ways, the work is just beginning. Even though we've just done this 12 months of work, now the work really starts. The engagement with state and federal government, with companies, with key academics in this space, Now that we have more evidence to validate the hunch that we had, the work is really beginning. So we're really looking forward to engaging with stakeholders all over the country, and you'll be hearing more soon.
We've been discussing Minds to Medicines, the radiopharmaceuticals opportunity for Australia. Well, I'm delighted to welcome Professor Eva Bezek to the podcast. Eva is a professor in the medical radiations at the University of South Australia and deputy director of the Australian Research Council's Industrial Transformation Training Centre for Radiation Innovation. Welcome, Eva.
Thank you, Caroline, for having me.
I'm really excited to have you on the podcast. You're a nuclear physicist as well as a medical physicist. I'm really interested to find out about where you see this field of radiopharmaceuticals, which is upon us now. Where is this going to take us in terms of new medicines and new treatments for patients?
Well, that's a very good question, Caroline, because we are at the moment at a very opportune space where nuclear medicine, which also is called molecular imaging or molecular medicine or radionuclide therapy medicine, is currently really exploding on the world stage. We have been using radioisotopes for imaging for diagnosis of disease for many years, and the expansion of the imaging has extended with the development of technology. We have moved from the gamma cameras to positron emission tomography, and further opportunities also increased with the bigger availability of cyclotrons so that we could produce fancier type of radioisotopes, connecting them to different chemical molecules and use them to image different parts of the body or different functions of the body. So our options really increased in the last 20 years, but we have also moved in nuclear medicine from using the radioisotope not only for the diagnosis of the disease, but also for the treatment of the disease. So we have moved to something that we call the radionuclide therapy or targeted radionuclide therapy, where the radioisotopes are attached to a vehicle, which will be then targeting special receptors, for example, on a cancer cell. Once they are attached to a cancer cell, the radioisotope will decay, cause radiation damage to the DNA of the cell, and effectively killing the cancer. So something like a magic bullet. There is huge interest and huge growth in this space at the moment. And what we have heard at overseas meetings, it is expected that by 2035, up to 60% of cancer patients should have some form of targeted radionuclide therapy. And this in turn actually leads to a shortage of radioisotopes for medical purposes worldwide at the moment.
How can South Australia sort of step in here to change this?
Yeah, look, South Australia is a wonderful place for many reasons. Some of the reasons are gifts of the geology, gifts of the nature, because we sit on the 23% of world's uranium ore deposits. And many people in Australia do not know that. And basically, whenever you are digging any commodities, any resources out of Earth, by definition, we are also bringing radioactive elements to the surface. So once you maybe retrieve your copper or any other minerals that the mines are interested in, we have leftover tailings that contain radioactive isotopes. While these radioactive isotopes some 20 years ago could have been looked as unwanted waste, these days we can actually separate them from the tailings, use those radioisotopes, for example, in the radiopharmaceutical industry. That's only one option. There are other applications as well. And then maybe return then clean tailings to their natural environment. So you can have really a circular economy where you're bringing up material to the surface, completely utilizing also the waste products of the primary mining objective and returning tailings to the clean state of the environment.
So there's a great opportunity there for South Australia.
Absolutely. Not to mention that South Australia is also, thanks to the investments of successive governments, home to the one of the largest biomedical precincts in the world, where we really support investment, infrastructure and research in medical and biomedical sciences. And it also then attracts investments from the industry. So there is a big strive, A, towards innovation and towards translation, the true bench to bed, bench to clinic translation of the industry. We also have perhaps know-how in terms of radiation sciences with having a cyclotron, well-established nuclear medicine degrees and well-established functional nuclear medicine departments that are very capable and active in clinical trials.
So now is a good time to sort of bring all of this together and move with what's happening in the market, so to speak.
So as I mentioned before, there is a huge interest in the development of the new radiopharmaceuticals. Just having perhaps a radioisotope is only one part of the story. We actually need to create that whole targeting vehicle, or what we called specifically radioimmunoconjugate. So lots of the perhaps interest is in development of the good radiochemistry to have a solid radiopharmaceutical that would be only targeting the disease and not targeting the healthy tissues. So we want that differential effect, because you can imagine that if you have a vehicle that will attach itself to normal cells as well as disease cells, we would be irradiating and therefore damaging healthy cells as well. So identifying the right proteins or right antibodies that would be only attaching themselves to a very specific receptors on a cancer cells or another cell is really the $100 million question. So there will be a lot of, you know, research in radiation chemistry. So I think we need to invest not only in maybe production of radioisotopes, but in development of radiopharmacy and radiation chemistry as a whole, and then translate this through preclinical, in vitro, and in vivo studies, then to phase one clinical trials. International collaborations would also be very important in this space.
And you've been in the research field for a long time in this area, working on precisely these types of projects. What do you see as the potential for this medicine for patients?
So one of the projects that, if you allow me to talk about our own projects, is research into pancreatic cancer. Pancreatic cancer is now it has recently been moved from a rare cancer to a common cancer. As a matter of fact, it's the seventh most commonly diagnosed cancer in Australia. But the five-year survival is only about 10%. So it's definitely a cancer with unmet demand, where we have not really increased the survival, improved patient outcomes over the last 50 years. One of the problems that we have there, that many of these cancers often don't have symptoms and are very difficult to diagnose. And by the time the patient presents to their clinician with symptoms, that cancer is usually quite big and unresectable. That means it cannot be surgically removed and often might have spread. So while you perhaps can use external beam radiotherapy, standard radiation oncology locally, or if the tumor is a bit small, you can maybe resect it. The metastatic, the cancer that has already escaped the main tumor and spread out through the body, needs to be treated what we call systemically. It needs to, the whole body needs to be flushed with therapy to identify these cells. And this is usually what chemotherapy does for us. But the problem with chemotherapy is that it is a bit indiscriminate. And that's why the patients feel so unwell after chemotherapy and, you know, have lots of side effects. So really our main research, as I mentioned previously, is can we actually create the whole body therapies that are still systemic, but discriminate or targeted? So we are looking at a radiopharmaceutical. We are using a specific antibody that is attached to actinium-225, which is an alpha radiation emitting radioisotopes that targets a very special receptor, which we call MUC1 cancer epitope on the pancreatic cancer cells. And we are hoping that our targeting vehicle, the antibody with actinium-225 attached to it, can treat not only the primary tumor in pancreas, but it will also seek the circulating cancer cells and micrometastases and eliminating the cancer cells that have already spread out throughout the body. As a matter of fact, when a patient succumbs to the disease, it's usually not from the primary tumor. It is from the metastatic disease. So really the holy grail of any cancer treatment should be actually being able to treat the spread out or metastatic disease.
And what stage is this research at, Eva?
We have developed a radiopharmaceutical and we have seen some very promising results in pancreatic cancer cell lines. We have also developed a computational model that models in silico, in computer, pharmacokinetics of that radiopharmaceutical so that we can also model the uptake and radiation dose to normal organs as well as to cancerous cells and the tumors and micrometastases. And we just got funding to move towards the animal studies. And hopefully if all goes well, because we have received some interest from pharmaceutical industries from around the world, we could move to clinical trials.
What do you see as the challenge that we have in Australia and even in South Australia around this future workforce that we need to really drive this industry?
So unfortunately, while the interest and demand for nuclear medicine services is rapidly increasing, we are at the same time facing severe shortages in Australia in nuclear medicine workforce. And that's across numerous stages. There is a shortage of nuclear medicine technologists. So these are the people who often inject the radioisotopes and perform the scans with the patients. Nuclear medicine training for clinicians is very extensive and takes a long time. We also do not have enough radiation chemists, radiation chemistry programs in the nation. And we need also to establish programs in clinical radiopharmacy because lots of this training is done post-chemistry, post-pharmacy degree as an on-the-job training.
You're involved in the ARCS Industrial Transformation Training Center for Radiation Innovation. Tell us what you're doing with that organization, what you're trying to change.
So the Industrial Training Transformation Center, RadInnovate, is a collaboration of three universities, Australian National University, University of South Australia, University of Adelaide, and up to 16 partners. And these partners include CSIRO, ANSTO, ARPANSA, which is Australian Radiation Protection and Nuclear Safety Agency, as well as companies for radiopharmaceuticals like Advanced Cells or Beta Voltaic Energy like Entex and many others. We are looking at three pillars in radiation sciences in a broad sense. We are looking at uplifting the workforce and educating and generating new leaders in the radiation sciences. So this is on at the postgraduate levels when we will be offering up to 20 PhD scholarships where the projects are co-designed directly with the industry. So the students, postgraduate students, will work on a research project that is relevant to the industry itself, so that it's immediately translatable from the university environment and solving a problem for the industry, hoping that part of the project is also spent for a student as an internship, so that they immediately understand how the industry functions and what they want. And at the end of their PhD, they are fully employable by a particular industry. The ITTC looks at the radiation in broader aspect. It's not just medical radiations. We are looking at space. Not many people realize that space is actually full of radiation. And this is very important for satellite industry. Because if you shoot your satellite during a solar flare, all your electronics will get burned and you have lost many millions of investment.
Right.
So with the accelerator facilities in Adelaide and at the Australian National Universities, we can do some material testing, how the electronics can withstand radiation hardness and do some radiation modeling as well. We also have projects in environmental monitoring. For example, if these radioisotopes are retrieved through mining, you know, do we find these radioisotopes in water or in plants or in animals? So we can basically sort of monitor very low levels of contamination within the environment using very specific accelerator mass spectrometry equipment, sorry for the difficult term, located at the Australian National University. So apart from this uplift workforce, the second pillar is innovate, where we are looking for the innovative solutions to current industrial problems, such as development of new radiopharmaceutical. And the last pillar is governance, regulations, social license, communications of science, so that we also develop an all-rounded radiation scientist that are also capable of talking to public, to lay people, as well as politicians and other government stakeholders about importance of radiation sciences, about understanding perhaps benefits and risks of radiation, because there is lots of misconceptions out there. So we really want to, you know, educate very well-rounded future leaders in this space.
Thank you for taking us through that. And obviously, yes, the ITTC for radiation innovation is a key part of trying to drive the radiopharmaceuticals industry in Australia. What do you think we need to do to unlock the potential of South Australia's radiopharmaceuticals sector right now?
To begin with, I think we need, which I think the MTP Connect has already done as a government industry accelerator for medical and health sciences, it needs to be a good mapping exercise of what we have in terms of resources, physical equipment, materials, as well as human resources, and then prepare a good business plan. And from that, it would be also driving investment into from government and industry into establishing partnerships and developing then a plan, short-term, mid-term, and long-term, as you would usually do, as what we would like to achieve in each step. And maybe I was talking about the shortage of radiopharmaceuticals, especially in, there is a huge interest, I'll make one step back, of alpha-emitting radioisotopes, such as actinium-225. This is a huge opportunity space. So we need to also understand maybe where the shortages are around the world and where we could maybe fill in the gaps. Another isotope of interest is lead-212 or astatine-211, and thinking what are the pathways, what are the equipment that we would need to become producers of these radioisotopes and not only become national, but also international suppliers of isotopes. I can tell you from my own experience, I was trying to purchase actinium-225 for our research project from Germany, but I was told that all their actinium resources are spoken for German patients, so they cannot export anything. Importing the radioisotopes, it's quite costly, and there are, of course, as you would expect, strict regulatory environments, so lots of paperwork, it takes time. So if we could produce them locally, it would definitely improve access to radioisotopes, not only for research, but for our patients, and reduce the cost of radiopharmaceuticals.
Yeah, so that is a nascent industry, I guess, for us. There's a definite global opportunity there for us to step into.
Absolutely. And, you know, there are eye-reviewed papers for journals where the authors are discussing how to address the shortages of radioisotopes and how to find alternative pathways for production of lead-212 or actinium-225.
What are you most excited about ever in this space? What's the thing that's really keeping you passionate about working in this area?
So firstly, I am really, really happy to see the huge interest and the huge expansion of nuclear medicine, both in imaging and targeted radionuclide therapy, because it will open the whole new potential, whole new pathway in how we can diagnose and treat diseases. And while nuclear medicine has been primarily used for diagnosis of cancer, we are looking at new imaging agents. I'll move away a bit from the radiotherapy for the time being. I think we will be using it a bit more for diagnosis of neurodegenerative diseases like dementia. And there are some predictions that maybe the cost of dementia at some stage in our society will overcome the cost of cancer. And potentially these patients can live for many years and they are dependent on full care. So we really need better functional imaging such as that provided by nuclear medicine that will allow us to early diagnose and differentiate whether the patient has Alzheimer's or Lewy body disease or something else to be appropriately managed at an earlier stage. So I think it's exciting that we can go really far beyond cancer and address other problems. I work in collaboration with International Atomic Energy Agency, IAEA, in Vienna, which Australia is a member of. And they are really looking at us also as leader in Asia-Pacific region. Many nations do not have A equipment, but they also lack trained staff. And IAEA is working closely with us to send maybe doctors from Asia Pacific, radiographers, nuclear medicine technologists to us for training. So we also have, I would say, global community service opportunity here to also help the patients and their families in our neighborhood.
Well, that's super exciting. We really appreciate your time, Eva, talking about this and the opportunities for Australia to drive a local radiopharmaceutical sector, but also to join with our neighbours around the world and really make a difference for patients battling some of the most difficult medical problems like cancer and neurological conditions.
And thank you, Caroline, for your time and for having me this afternoon.
We've been talking to Professor Eva Vizak. Eva is the Professor in Medical Radiations at the University of South Australia and Deputy Director of the Australian Research Council's Industrial Transformation Training Centre for Radiation Innovation. To continue our conversation about minds to medicines, we're chatting with Chaddy Barkal. He's the director of the Molecular Imaging and Therapy Research Unit, otherwise known as MITRU, at the South Australian Health and Medical Research Institute, also known as SAMRI. I'm also joined by MTP Connect's Partnerships Director for South Australia, Dana Bell, who has coordinated the development of the Minds to Medicines report. Hi, Chaddy.
Hi, Caroline.
This is where you found yourself running the MITRU, which has South Australia's cyclotron facility as part of that facility. Can you tell us what happens at the MITRU?
Well, yes, MITRU is the Molecular Imaging and Therapy Research Unit. It started in 2013, 2014, but since 2014, it has been focusing on research development and manufacturing of radiopharmaceuticals under GMP conditions. So we have a license from the TGA to manufacture a certain amount of drugs, a certain number of radiopharmaceuticals. But we also collaborate with a diverse range of stakeholders, including researchers from universities, from biotech companies, and the hospitals, of course. We also work directly with oncologists and nuclear medicine doctors, with regulatory bodies, with various other industry partners. We don't consider we have competitors, rather than we consider all of us as partners in the development of nuclear medicine. So our involvement is across local, in South Australia, nationwide, because we supply also our product for clinical trials all over Australia. And also we have a lot of international collaborators.
And what sort of companies in the radiopharmaceutical space in Australia are you working with?
So we work with the big companies in radiopharmaceuticals like Clarity and Telix, where we manufactured the product for example, Clarity. We did all their product that were involved in clinical trials in Australia. We work now with Telix on some of their products. We have negotiated with other companies. I mean, the other Australian radiopharmaceutical company is Rad Theranostics. We also work with the startups like Lytherix and Entex. We also had a lot of involvement with multinational teams, especially with our collaborators in the university, like with, for example, Karen Jones from the university. We have collaboration with people in Belgium, US, Canada, Germany, France, and Italy. And for example, recently we, with collaboration with Dr. Tim Sargent and Dr. Edward Robbins from my team, we got an NHMRC grant that will develop a cutting-edge brain scan capable of assessing lysosomal function, which will assess how the brain is capable of cleaning itself and keeping young.
That's a lot going on there in South Australia at the MITRU. Your sort of passion is the manufacturing and the creation of this radiopharmaceutical technology. Tell us a little bit more about this manufacturing process that's involved in this type of medicine and imaging.
Yeah, so look, radiopharmaceuticals are a big group of medicinal products, right? But they share the same thing, because manufacturing them will require an isotope. So the whole thing will start with producing an isotope, and the production needs to irradiate usually a target material. And that happens either in a nuclear reactor, like the example of lutetium-177, that happens, for example, the one that we get it from ANSTO, or in a particle accelerator, which the cyclotron is an example of these machines. So we put something stable in the cyclotron and we bombard it and we get our product. So in Adelaide here, we can make the fluorine 18, the oxygen 15, the carbon 11, nitrogen 13, zirconium 89, copper 64, gallium 68. I don't want to forget, but there are more. The next step will be taking this isotope and chemically incorporate it into a biologically active molecule. We like to call that labeling. So it's like putting a price tag on something. We put that isotope into a molecule. Once we make that, then you have to formulate it into a solution that can penetrate the human body, because some of them won't be available for the metabolism to consume. And then we have to dispense it into the right form, whether it is an injectable or a capsule. We don't do capsule here, but some other manufacturer will do that. The next step would be quality control. Of course, you can't send a medicinal product without testing it for its purity and safety and efficiency. And that's a part of our TGA compliance that we have to do because we are a GMP manufacturer. Then we have to package the product and label it. So this is a medicinal product. Of course, like all the drugs, you know, the box or the wrapper or the packaging material are a part of the drug. The information on it are very heavily regulated. And on top of that, our product is radioactive. So we have to label it as such. So we have, again, two different authorities to comply, the TGA and in Australia, it is the EPA. And then you have the distribution. Again, not unlike any other normal pharmaceutical in the market, radiopharmaceuticals have to be distributed in a very controlled way, to ensure safety, but also to ensure the arrival of the product with the required potency. And that in part is due to its radioactive nature. Because some of these products have a very short half-life. So you can't, for example, store it in a warehouse overnight and then ship it to your client. It has to be manufactured and shipped immediately.
So a really complex sort of pathway through that process. You must have to have a very skilled workforce to be part of that and to support that.
Yes. So look, our workforce is really specialized. It is multidisciplinary. You will find people from a lot of scientific expertise, regulatory knowledge, specialized skill. For example, we need chemists, obviously, because it relates to chemistry, but also we need another specialized type of chemists, which are the radiochemists, who have all the chemistry knowledge, but are specialized in dealing with radioactive product. Of course, we can have pharmacists, pharmacologists. We need quality assurance people who understand the regulatory standards and requirements and guide us through the whole process from the concept through the manufacturing to even the packaging and distribution. We need physicists, radiation safety officers. We need specialists in logistics and supply chain. And also the other thing, like the business development and marketing professionals who understands the target. I don't like to call them clients, but the patients. But sometimes we don't directly communicate with the patients. It will have to go through the healthcare facilities. So it is a big variety of specialties, but most of them are in very short availability. They are like gold. When you find a radiochemist, hold on to them with your hand and teeth.
That's interesting. So there's obviously some workforce shortages there that we need to consider if we're going to sort of scale up in this area.
Yes, definitely. And we worked really hard in the last 8-9 years to develop this training program that will bring, for example, a fresh graduate in and train them up to a level to be that fully rounded scientist who can be present in all these aspects of the manufacturing, from the isotope production to the labeling, quality control, and quality assurance and regulatory compliance. Each one of these is a totally different field, but we like to teach our people to be very well informed in everything. so they can be ready to tackle any issue that they find, and they can help the other team whenever they face a problem.
Speaking of issues, Chatty, listening to you talk about the complexities right along the supply chain, I think South Australia is in good hands with your international experience and your deep knowledge of this area. What are some of the main challenges from a manufacturing perspective with radiopharmaceuticals?
Look, I already explained how the manufacturing chain works. So, for example, one of the challenges is the isotope supply. Now, we are blessed in South Australia to have a cyclotron here that can make such a variety of isotopes, but there are always something that we need to source from somewhere else. So the availability of some radioisotope can be limited. Like, again, Australia is blessed to have a nuclear reactor that can provide us with some of these isotopes, but also they can't make everything. For example, the actinium-225. There are very few facilities in the world that can manufacture it, and you will be put on a long waiting list. And it's super expensive. That's another challenge that, yes, radiopharmaceuticals can be expensive, and that's due to the specialized equipment, facilities, and the workforce that I just explained, as well as the regulatory compliance cost. And because most of these, the ones that we're working on, are novel radiopharmaceuticals, there is limited reimbursement. And in some cases, there is a limited market demand. So that will drive the cost a little bit higher. Some other challenges is in the nature of the product. They are radioactive products, so they have a short half-life. Like the F-18 have a 2 hours half-life, and it is ideal for a lot of radiopharmaceuticals, and we use it a lot. Some of them have a shorter half-life, like carbon-11 or oxygen-15. Some of them have a slightly longer one, like, for example, the copper-64 have a 12 hours half-life. The zirconium-89 have a 3 days half-life. So you can kind of select the isotope depending on the biological function and the metabolism of the particular molecule that you are trying to send. So if, like, an antibody that will require a longer time to reach their target, you can't use a short half-life. You use a slightly longer one, like the zirconium-89, etc. Another challenge is with the complexity of the synthesis and the radiation safety. Of course, you don't want your radiochemist to be exposed to radiation. That's why we have those automated synthesis modules that will do the work for us. And to add another level of safety and patient protection, we use a kit that is single use. So we put it on the machine with the reagents, and we write a certain software, and the machine will do that chemical reaction for us. Of course, these things do not come cheap. Automation is very expensive, and then you can't just put it on a benchtop and sit next to it. It should be housed within a shielded compartment. We call them hot cells, and they are made of lead, of course, covered with medical grade stainless steel. But yes, these things are not cheap, and they are not readily available. So when you want something, you have to order it, and they will build it for you. So you have to wait sometimes for them to build it. And then they will ship it into Australia because there are very few suppliers within Australia. And this is one of the things that delays our project. So if we need to build a new production line, for example, we need to find the budget for it. And that can take some time depending on who's the sponsor or who's the grant supplier. And then you have to put your order, wait for your turn. It will be manufactured, and then wait for it to be shipped in here. And once it's here, you can't just push the button and use it because you have a regulatory compliance, and we are a TGA licensed facility. We have to do a lot of tests from the installation to the operation, to the acceptance, to the performance, and then validate the process on that. And then we can think about putting it on the market.
Chatty, a couple of things I heard you talk about then. One is the half-life, and then just then you were talking about being able to respond to new opportunities. If I think about the opportunity for South Australia to scale manufacturing to meet the demand, not only for South Australians, also for Australia, What's involved in scaling manufacturing for South Australia to serve a bigger population?
Look, South Australia has a very strong research ecosystem. Between the universities, the research institute, the health facilities that we have, and the industry that we can see are all around us. So investing in development and scaling the pharmaceutical will further support clinical trials and create opportunities to boost innovation and streamline the availability of new pharmaceuticals. So what I was talking about in terms of purchasing this infrastructure, it will not just sit there doing nothing, because we can keep continuous manufacturing and we can have different lines that can be operated at the same time. So scaling up is not very hard. With some limited investment, we can do that really quickly. We can develop our manufacturing. We can also, with some help in logistics, we can leverage South Australia's strategic location and export these radiopharmaceuticals. We already have done that nationwide, but also we can do it internationally and ship our product to the global market, especially with the ones with the little longer half-life. We can utilize our long experience in training and education. Some of our team members are already lecturers in the university, myself included. And the development the education program that we developed here is not only helping our staff, we also host students from the university. Even if they didn't end up being radiochemists, the experience that they will get from working with us will help other industries into improving their manufacturing and following the strict quality assurance program that we have in here. When we have all that, we will attract even more collaborations and more industry will be interested into investing in this.
Sounds like all the ingredients are there, from the workforce expertise that you have in training and development, in the clinical trials ecosystem that South Australia is globally renowned for, as well as the strategic location potentially for building on the export even more broadly than Australia. Yes. To the Asia Pacific region. So it sounds like you can see a role for South Australia to unlock the growth of the radiopharmaceutical industry nationally. Is that right?
Yes. Look, we already supply nationally. So we have the potential to become a national leader in the radiopharmaceutical industry. So by leveraging this research and innovation capability that are here, the production facility that we already have, and the potential for growth that we can have with a little bit of support, we definitely have a lot of expertise, and our experts are also helping in other places. So SA can further support clinical trials and health infrastructure. We can help more industry collaboration. So yeah, through this effort, we can unlock the radiopharmaceutical industry opportunities that are not utilized yet and be a big player on the national scale and even globally.
Fantastic. You've talked about so many aspects of radiopharmaceuticals, from sourcing isotopes to manufacturing, quality, workforce. What are you most excited about, Chaddy, when you think about the growth of the radiopharmaceutical industry? What excites you the most?
So what excites me the most is, let me tell you about a little bit of my story. When I was at the university studying, I didn't know that there is an industry called radiopharmaceutical manufacturing. So I'm super excited to know what opportunities or specialties that I don't know about now that will be available in the next few years. So these people that I'm training now, the students that I'm teaching, they will probably be ready for a job that doesn't exist yet. And that, thinking about that, is very exciting.
So really future-proofing the careers and the ecosystem in general.
I hope so.
It sounds like, you know, we're on the edge of something really special coming out of South Australia in particular around this Minds to Medicines opportunity. And it's great that the Mitru is part of that.
Yeah, look, the concept of leveraging resources from the mining sector and applying them into the development of life-saving medicine, yeah, it opens up a new frontier of possibilities. So what excites me the most here is the potential for innovation and collaboration, really, between those two traditionally separate sectors. So this could foster, I don't know, maybe it creates a certain sustainability or efficiency in repurposing materials that would have gone to waste if they are not used, but they are going to be used and potentially benefit some patients.
Absolutely. And I guess that's really what's driving everyone's interest in this sector today, is the potential for new treatments for patients, a whole new sort of area of medicine.
And every day we discover that there is something new that is not there. We need someone who is specialized in this little bit of the industry. Like as I said in the past, I try to make that rounded scientist who is knowledgeable in all aspects of the industry. But the industry is growing so fast and so large that you can barely keep up with that. So in the past, you can have a radiochemist doing everything, but now you need someone specialized in labeling small molecule and someone specialized in utilizing those automated synthesis module and someone who is both a chemist and an IT specialist who will write the program for the machine to understand the chemistry and optimize that to give the best outcome at the end. You need someone who is specialized in taking an antibody and adding things on it to be able to receive an isotope. And that's another type of chemistry that was not in high demand in the past, but now we need people specialized in that because we keep finding new antibodies that have the potential to treat or image a certain disease. And we need someone who's ready to do that and not have to go back to the university and teach them everything from the beginning.
Lots of opportunities there, lots of openings, door openings, I guess you'd call it, for scientists yes. Coming through the system. And that sounds really exciting, Teddy.
It is. It is really exciting. I can't wait for what the future is hiding for us.
Fabulous. Big thank you to Teddy Barkle for coming on the podcast to talk about radiopharmaceuticals industry. He's the director of the Molecular Imaging and Therapy Research Unit, MITRU, at the South Australian Health and Medical Research Institute.
My name's Macy Delos Reyes, and I'm the principal scientist at Entex Limited. So I really just love to know how things work. I was that insatiably curious, really annoying Y kid that I guess having that curiosity, it really set me up in a path towards science from my bachelor's to my PhD in nuclear materials engineering. And my professional trajectory, I would say, since then has surprised me. It's quite surprising. That being my quite multifaceted through involvement. I've been involved in R&D, teaching, policy, regulation, and now in tech commercialization, where, yeah, I'm the principal scientist of this really awesome clean energy technology company, Entex Limited.
And the interest in nuclear energy and the use of nuclear science is such an interesting field. Absolutely. What got you going into that area?
It's not overly profound, to be fair. I didn't, growing up in Australia, not really hearing about nuclear science or the nuclear field and nuclear industry. It was really through my PhD supervisor, actually, Professor Peter Mierski. He was a fantastic mentor and saw the potential for me to do a PhD in collaboration with the Australian Nuclear Science and Technology Organisation, which is ANSTO. So having the chance to complete my PhD predominantly at Lucas Heights, where our Australian Research Reactor is, gave me a chance to get to know what nuclear was all about. Radiation is everywhere, and learning that at ANSTO, who are the expertise in Australia for nuclear and radiation science, was fantastic.
Entex. It's a South Australian company. It's known as a disruptor. It wants to be known as a disruptive company in the field of energy technologies. Tell us about what Entex is doing around nuclear medicine and radiopharmaceuticals.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't want to be biased, but I would have to say that Entex is a pretty unique technology incubator in Australia, filled with some of the most exceptional interdisciplinary people I've had the pleasure to work with, and they're all dedicated to developing and launching some pretty innovative technology solutions in the decarbonisation, space and defence, hydrogen and medical sectors, most of which at our core revolves around waste to energy resources. So I'm going to give a shout out here to Bryn Jones, our Managing Director, and Dr. Julian Kelly, our Chief Technology Officer, who's actually the brainchild and pioneer of some of our novel projects, and with their unwavering belief in harnessing radioisotope energy from waste sources, that's empowered us to look into their recovery, particularly for medical applications like nuclear medicine and radio immunotherapies.
We're talking about the concept of minds to medicines, and obviously this is where the whole concept sort of starts at the beginning, processing mining waste to become medical isotopes to use for radiopharmaceuticals, for either diagnosing or treating patients, particularly in oncology at the moment. But we know there are other applications. Can you explain in sort of simple terms, you know, what is meant by minds to medicine?
It is a little complex, but also quite achievable. So I guess our intention is to recover isotopes from these waste streams that have been derived from the resource and energy sectors. And we want to collate these to, I guess, develop and manufacture the starting precursors, either in, you know, existing or emerging medical treatments through some pretty novel processing and recycling approaches. And just to put that simply, that really just involves a number of physical or mechanical, chemical and purification steps to get these precursor isotopes. And it's been great to leverage this opportunity. We've formed quite a number of wonderful collaborations with some companies, and most notably Tellus Holdings, who through their Sandy Ridge low-level radioactive waste facility in Western Australia, we've been able to trial some wastes to see if our processes suit for this type of recovery.
So how is that going? You're at the sort of trial stage?
So we are at the trial stage. We have had some samples come through, trialing them through our various processes and gotten some extremely great results from that. And so from there, it's really optimizing and developing these processes more toward a facility towards commercialization.
Is it uranium waste or is it metals waste? What type of mining
waste?
Any.
It could be waste from some mining waste from the oil and gas sector, and other industries, like chemical industries, phosphate industries. So it's a number of commodities and resource sectors.
Macy, South Australia has some unique aspects for why this kind of activity is ideal in this part of Australia. Can you tell us a bit more about what South Australia's unique value proposition is?
Yeah, sure. And it's fascinating that I wouldn't necessarily say merging or interfacing the resource and commodity sector with the medical sector is normally not one, two industries that collaborate together. But that is absolutely what we have in South Australia, both, I guess, separately. But in some ways, South Australia is such a unique place in terms of bringing these two sectors together, where we have amazing expertise and such longevity in South Australia in the resource and commodity sector. We've been doing it for such a long time, and that's kind of what we're also known for. But we also have this emerging and existing health sector that is evidenced by just going down North Terrace with all the universities and the South Australian Health and Medical Research Institute and the Royal Adelaide Hospital and the up-and-coming Women's and Children's. We've got a fantastic network of healthcare expertise that normally doesn't occur anywhere else, I would say, both nationally and globally. So having this opportunity be set in South Australia and combining these with all of the capabilities that each uniquely provide is such a great value proposition for South Australia in terms of sovereign capability.
The ecosystem is certainly, it's small enough that people know each other and big enough to have a global impact. What about the mines themselves? Is there anything unique about what is in South Australia compared to other states?
Yeah, absolutely. In South Australia, we undertake mining and mineral operations with rare earth materials and with uranium that have absolutely all the elements required to harness some of these precursor material for radiopharmaceuticals and radioimmunotherapies.
When it comes to sovereign capability, I'm guessing there are some challenges with sourcing materials that are used for radiopharmaceuticals. Why is it so important to have a sovereign supply chain in Australia?
I think having a sovereign supply chain in South Australia is absolutely imperative, particularly in the medical sector, where radiopharmaceuticals nominally have what's called half-lives, and so their usability, I guess, decays over time. So having that national infrastructure to supply reliable sources of these radiopharmaceuticals for patient use is absolutely important. And globally, there is a nuclear medicine renaissance occurring, where the value of these types of materials and pharmaceuticals have been evidenced to be really fantastic for patient healthcare. And so without access to these, because we rely a lot on the global supply chain upstream to supply these precursor materials, particularly from Russia with lutetium-177, having capability and access to that here is important to service the health and well-being of Australians. The precursor to lutetium-177 is supplied from Russia predominantly. So then access to that will then limit the usability of radiopharmaceuticals and nuclear medicine treatments, not only here, but worldwide.
Macy, could you expand on that a bit? If you start from the precursors to lutetium-177 and talk about sovereign capability, is there a use case or an example that you can share?
A current example of, the procurement and the difficulties with some of the radioisotopes available for nuclear medicine is actinium-225. So actinium-225 is an alpha-emitting radioisotope, and its, production relies a lot on a small number of nuclear reactors and large particle accelerators to generate these. And these are quite expensive options for its production, and only a few companies do it. So the methods are, putting some of these precursors in reactors and irradiating them to turn them into something else. And that is quite onerous. So the availability of actinium-225 is limited by how it can be produced. And so with this opportunity around the extraction and recovery of radioisotopes that are within mining and resource wastes, so actinium-225 is what's called a targeted alpha therapy radiopharmaceutical option. But there's also others like actinium-225 that also have very good indication of working in the same way. And one of those is lead-212. And so lead-212, the precursor to that is within the uranium-232 decay chain that is within these mining resource wastes, which provide, I guess, an alternative source and an alternative method for targeted alpha therapy, that you don't have to use a reactor or a particle accelerator for if there is that ability to process and recover it from these wastes.
You've mentioned lutetium, actinium, and lead. How many others are there?
Oh, goodness. So if we talk about availability now and then what's upcoming, there is quite a few in the pipeline. So I guess apart from lutetium-177, lead-212, and actinium-225, there are a variety of radioisotopes that are either existing or in development currently at the moment to service the nuclear medicine sector. I could think of iodine-131, for example. That's a oncology radiopharmaceutical for the thyroid. Iridium-192, which is within a high-dose brachytherapy that's used for prostate cancer. And also the common one that is produced largely by ANSTO, which is molybdenum-99 and technetium-99M, which is used for diagnostic imaging of bones and kidneys and the liver, etc. So there are many that exist and many that are coming within this space.
Let's change gears a bit now. Macy, in your diverse career, you've also had a lot to do with the regulatory side of radioactive substance manufacturing and handling. What is the regulatory landscape like in Australia?
So within Australia, I think that within the radiation space, there are 9 different types of legislative tools that are administered for the safety of the use, storage and handling of radioactive materials. And so it's fantastic. It's actually, I would say, more broadly, both here and globally, that radiation and the use of radiation and nuclear material is very heavily regulated. And also that safety is paramount, which is attests to, particularly in Australia, and not very, very few accidents in this space, thanks to our regulatory regime. And I think one of the really good aspects now that's been changing in that space, that in the past has been a little bit frustrating when it comes to state to state, because each state has their own legislation within radiation and nuclear, is this movement, say, of personnel. So, for example, a nuclear medicine physician, a nuclear medicine technologist, or even a borehole logger in the mining industry, with differences in requirements that are, I guess, stipulated within each of the legislative tools. It's been difficult to, I guess, move from state to state, but there's been a fantastic initiative from the federal government a couple of years ago that has implemented the licensing and registration of personnel in this space to use the Mutual Recognition Act. Because before, it's like collecting stamps or coins, where you collect all of some people had 9 different types of licenses, but now you can consolidate that into one, which makes it a lot easier, I guess, particularly in the health space, to be able to go and work there from, I guess, different hospitals and health organisations. So that's been a really wonderful change.
As well as harmonising the regulatory landscape between the states, what other opportunities are there to create a better environment so that we can scale this industry safely and effectively? You know, think about, you mentioned a few different types of roles that may not even be limited to healthcare. How can the regulatory landscape be improved for the medicines themselves? And also when you think about workforce development, like with AUKUS, for example.
improvements within the regulatory space. So, because there's a lot of other organisations like the Department of Energy and Mines that issue the Mining Act, and then there's the TGA, who then after someone develops a product or a medical device, they're then there to scrutinise and also approve drugs and radiopharmaceuticals. And I guess, then there's the body in nationally that advocates for all of these regulatory authorities to ensure that everything's seamless. But I guess in a way, with access to patient treatment, there is a little bit of a gap within Medicare, and so the MBS and the PBS, where a lot of that approval process is quite onerous.
Zooming back out, Macy, it's clear that you're excited about lots of different things, from the intellectual stimulation of working in this space and the work that Entex is doing. What are you most excited about, Macy?
If we were talking about this particular space, most importantly, I would say what excites me the most is that real potential for saving lives and improving people's health. That's number one. And at the moment, again, as I mentioned, this area has really been revived, and it's really undergoing a rebirth of sorts and it's really evident through increases in research and commercialization of new radiopharmaceuticals, radioisotope strategies for molecular imaging and radioimmunotherapies, for instance, that can lead to better outcomes with patients who have a variety of diseases and conditions. So I guess that opportunity to contribute to these advancements is truly amazing. And I think now is the most opportune time to develop this capability locally so that we can make it available for everyone worldwide.
You've been listening to Macy De Los Reyes, and a very passionate nuclear scientist. And it's been great to have you on the podcast, Macy, to talk about the potential for radiopharmaceuticals and what Entex are doing to process some of these radioisotopes using mining waste.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been great.
My name is Matt Zeller. I'm the country president for Novartis Pharmaceuticals, and Australia and New Zealand. Have been here now just a few months officially with family and kids and everything, and happy to be here.
And previous to coming to Australia, you've been based in Hungary and a number of other European cities, including Switzerland, of course, which is where Novartis is based. And you've also worked in a number of other pharma companies. So you're bringing a really deep insight into the pharmaceutical industry.
I hope so. So I've lived and worked in, I think, six different countries and for a range of both pharma companies, as well as I was a strategy consultant for BCG. And I've worked and lived and worked in a bunch of different places. So the reason I'm so attracted to the pharmaceutical industry is this intersection of science and technology. But more importantly, it's about patients. How do we bring the latest innovations, and how do we make sure it's not just that they're available, not just they're approved, but they actually get into the patient's hands that need them and their family? That's really what motivates me on a day-to-day basis. And here in for Novartis in Australia is the latest iteration of hopefully my ability to make an impact on a big scale.
Well, we're really interested to talk to you about radiopharmaceuticals, and we know that Novartis is really leading the charge here, particularly at the moment around oncology, cancer treatments. Would you like to tell us a little bit about the background of Novartis developing precision medicines for cancer?
Yes, I mean, just starting with the background, this is, as you mentioned, just a fascinating area of science, and really one that not just Novartis, but all other companies have decided that this is really the future of a lot of science and treatment and technology. And so Novartis began investing and researching in this space a number of years ago, both through our internal development as well as some external acquisitions as well. And now we have been across many parts of the world over the last few years, leading the way in bringing some of these therapies to market. So it's a core tenet of one of our technology platforms and many of our disease areas, and actually one that is stretching across multiple disease areas. So we're really excited about it and have been leading the charge, to use your words, in many other parts of the world. And we hope to do the same thing here in Australia.
Talk to us about what this next generation nuclear medicine sort of looks like. There's lots of different terms. People might have heard of theranostics and radioligand therapies. What are they and why are they so important?
Yeah, and I think the easiest way to talk about radioligand therapy is just to basically say, by harnessing the power of radioactive atoms and applying it to advanced cancers through radioligand therapy, they deliver radiation to targeted cells anywhere in the body. Now, the goal of that means that it's a targeted approach, and so you limit the damage to surrounding tissues, which is ultimately the goal of what we're doing. And people have probably heard of diagnostics where they receive a PET scan or you really trying to detect those cancerous cells in the body. But this is what we're trying to ultimately bring to market here in Australia, is a treatment for metastatic castration-resistant prostate cancer. And you infuse a therapeutic radioisotope into the body. And we talked about this sort of targeted therapy. But it's not just about this therapy, and that's why we're so excited about it, is it's actually a range. It's a whole pipeline. And so Novartis has a promising pipeline of around 12 different assets and 15 different indications and, you know, dozens of clinical trials all over the world. But it's also many different other types of cancers as well, breast, pancreatic, colon, lung. The applications are really across a wide range of therapeutic areas and uses. And Novartis is just one company of many, both Australian as well as international companies, that are focused on bringing these therapies to market in the future.
What's the unmet need there for patients at the moment?
As I mentioned, we're starting with prostate cancer. That's really where the cleanest application of these technologies are. And unfortunately, in Australia, the unmet need for prostate cancer is still huge. So there's around 250,000 men in Australia currently living with prostate cancer, and roughly 4 to 5% of those patients have stage 4 cancer. That's just under 1% of the population here. And in terms of unmet need, to answer your question, it's there's no lack of eligible patients, right? We hear this from physicians, we hear this from patient associations all the time. It's really just about helping these patients find and access the latest innovations and to make an impact to them for these patients and their families. So what we hope is, with radioligand therapy as well as other new innovations across any disease area, like Novartis thinks about our mandate across any disease area, is we want to give patients more time with their loved ones and more time with their families. And that's really what focuses and where we get our energy and excitement on a day-to-day basis. So when your question was, what's the unmet need, we really hope that they can get these available to patients as early as possible, get them across a broad range of cancer types, and hopefully help with the unmet need that exists in Australia now.
And obviously there's an upside to this type of treatment, because you're talking about a targeted therapy. So hopefully the idea is less side effects or less damage to the rest of the body.
And if you think about how cancer care is evolving over the last, you know, dozens, 50 years, right? That's the whole goal. So the whole goal is that you get more and more targeted therapies and you minimize the damage to the surrounding tissues. And that's really what about the latest generations, not just radioligand therapy, but all the latest innovations, whether that's immuno-oncology or even the new class of antibody drug conjugates. It's about finding the patients who will benefit the most from that particular agent, but also minimizing the surrounding cells and the damage. And this is where the science is going. The great news is that all the great research, all the great investment, and a lot of that great thinking that's been done here in Australia and around the world is allowing us to bring these innovations to market. But now we have to do our job as a holistic ecosystem and figure out, how do we take these great new innovations and how do we get them to Australian patients and their families that need them?
Thanks, Matt. When you talk about the ecosystem, who are some of the players that are involved in these are new kinds of therapies that are coming to Australians, hopefully. Tell us more about the ecosystem.
So it's interesting, because in many ways, this is the first time that you're going to have all these players across the ecosystem working in the same way with the same goal. So you have the nuclear medicine department, you have the medical oncology department, you have implications around safety, not just for patient safety, but also protection from, how do you have this new supply chain work in a way that creates any, you know, a radioactive isotope and radioactive molecules. You have economical impacts, you have workforce impacts, you have health system impacts, whether the hospital, you have public and private system. You also have a reimbursement mechanism that exists at the national level, at the state level, at the local level, and then you have patients. And at the same time, you have the patient associations representing those patients. And then you have the broader pharmaceutical industry, both the international industry, as well as then the local Australian industry. Plus you have then all sorts of maturity from earlier stage startups to more established players to everything in between, you know, scientists, plus then everybody who's in an ancillary way affiliated with nuclear technology. And it's not just nuclear medicine, it's also nuclear technology more broadly. So this topic, when you just say theranostics or nuclear medicine, it triggers a bunch of different people to say, oh, this is interesting, which is why I think there's a lot of interest and excitement about the space in general.
You raise such a good point that the diversity and the scale is so big. Everyone going in the same direction is really important. Novartis has a reputation for being great at partnering. What is your philosophy and what do you think is important to make it successful in this context?
And like you said, the scope and the interest is huge, but also the challenges and the variables. And so Australia really has the benefit. It's a geographically isolated island nation, but it's huge. It's huge here in Australia, as I'm finding on these flights I'm taking all over the country and loving it and the views along the way. But anything radioactive, including a nuclear medicine, has a particular half-life within it, which it can be used. So that in many cases is just a few days. And so for our advanced, you know, prostate cancer therapy, we have 5 or 6 days for it to go from nuclear reactor into a patient's arm. For other RLTs in the pipeline, for us and for others, it could be even shorter. So eventually the ecosystem on Australia, as we were talking about, Dana, it has to be mature enough to support a more circular and sovereign nuclear medicine industry. But to answer your question, the real opportunity for Australia that exists is to capitalize on its natural advantages and to become a real hub or a hotspot for the radiopharmaceutical industry, not just in Australia, but also more broadly across the Asia Pacific region and globally. And to add a little bit of urgency and excitement, now is the time. I mentioned earlier our active clinical trials. There's also more than 30 companies that we just were able to count a few days ago conducting over 300 trials. The RLT wave is undoubtedly coming globally with acquisitions and billions of dollars of investment. Australia right now has this moment to choose to jump on board and say, this is something we're going to embrace and invest in and make sure that there's a pathway across the whole ecosystem, or Australia could be overlooked, which is bad news, not just for the overall industry, but also could mean, most importantly, that patients will be missing out on the ability to access the latest therapies.
You mentioned natural resources and natural advantages for Australia. When we think of South Australia, we have mining industry, we have incredible R&D ecosystem. What do you think is South Australia's unique value proposition in Australia for radiopharmaceuticals?
Sure. To your question, Dana, there's also some historical pieces that South Australia has a proud history of being the first mover. Just last week, the Premier Peter Malinauskas showed really a big position by openly declaring his support for the development of the nuclear industries in South Australia. But there's so much that exists, both natural resources and others. And I think that's why we're so excited about working with MTP Connect and developing this Minds to Medicines report, because SA has the drive, the willingness, the infrastructure, the clinical excellence. There's great hospitals, great researchers, great natural resources that exist. And these hotspots that I mentioned earlier for radiopharmaceuticals are popping up all over the world. And I see no reason why Adelaide and SA could not come together and be really a leader in the space over the coming weeks and months and years.
Partnership. What is your philosophy in a local ecosystem or a national ecosystem? How do you go about partnering?
So if you look at any player, we talked about all the different players across the ecosystem earlier. If you look at any one of those players in isolation, they're going to be solving for their own set of unique incentives. So what are the things that they're solving for? What are the ways they're managing their budget? What are they, how are they taking care of their employees? Whatever those pieces are. And so if we optimize for only our little piece of that ecosystem, we're never going to have the real gains that we need to. And so I think Novartis's approach and my personal approach has been to really try to drop the hats that we're wearing and instead focus on broader problems and broader solutions and say, where are things that we can all get on the same page and push in the same direction, because then everyone's incentives are aligned. Now, certainly at some point we'll have to make choices and trade-offs, but at a starting point from an umbrella perspective, can we get aligned on one singular incentive and one singular objective? And in this case, we have it right in front of us perfectly, which is how do we bring these life-saving innovations to market, and how do we bring the latest innovations, radioligand therapies being the most recent iteration of this, for Australians, whether that's Novartis or any other company. And so if that's the broad framework, now our job is to think about, for Novartis, whether that's with patient organizations, patients, healthcare professionals, hospitals, governments, not-for-profits, any like-minded organizations, is how can we come together and say, this is what we're going to solve for. So how do we drop the hats that we're all wearing? And for us, then I think there's a really nice opportunity for them to figure out with that broad frame, what are the things that we want to solve for as each individual parties within this broader ecosystem.
Terrific. And it has been said that as a first mover, South Australia could unlock the opportunity more broadly in Australia and maybe even for the Asia Pacific. You know, you talked about the logistics and the supply chain. What do you see as the opportunity for Asia Pacific unlocking the industry in Australia or South Australia?
It's a good question. In many ways, there's so many things that we don't know yet about these technologies and about where the centers of excellence will be. We talked about the chemical elements that we'll be using for our first therapy, but there's pipeline has a broad range of applications, a broad range of how you put these ligands and radioisotopes together. So there's so many questions, and the technology is moving so unbelievably fast that wherever these pockets of research and excellence are, I think that has the ability to drive not just the research agenda, but also potentially where these hotspots and hubs are going to be for patients to be treated, plus the broader implication for the economy and for the investments and for jobs and capabilities and skills and supply chains being built as well. So at this point, we don't know exactly how the story is going to end and the specifics, but we know that radioligand is going to be a huge part of the broader healthcare story as it relates to prostate cancer and further cancers in the future. But we also know, and SA and others, that nuclear is going to be a huge part of the story as well. So if you take those pieces together and say, is that enough? Is that enough for SA to say, this is an area where we want to be making the investment to lead? Then that becomes really exciting for Australia and beyond.
You talked about Novartis having one lead asset and then a huge portfolio, and that just being one company. There are lots of companies bringing these treatments and theranostics and radioligand therapies to market. What is the path to market in Australia, and why is that so important for Novartis more broadly?
Yeah, so we're currently taking steps to make this happen as we speak. So we have an application in with the TGA for the registration of our radioligand therapy for advanced prostate cancer, and we are hopeful that will be finalized just in the next few months. And as you mentioned, Dana, the radioligand therapies, this is a key technology platform for Novartis, and we're committed to pursuing our extensive pipeline and bringing as many of these treatments as possible to Australian patients in the future. That's the exciting bit of it, is that we're in the process and we're just a few months away, but it's also a great opportunity for the state and for the national level to basically figure out how can we bring these therapies to market and start to help and make an impact for patients and their families.
Novartis has led in this way before, for example, bringing cell and gene therapies to market, where there also wasn't a clear path to market.
Yep.
So what was the approach? What are some of the learns, and are they applicable in this scenario?
Yeah, I think when you step back more broadly and say the job of a leading pharmaceutical company like a Novartis that is oftentimes out in front on a lot of these leading technologies, if it's our job to figure out how do we bring these therapies to market, then certainly we're always going to have some of these conversations and challenges. The learns and the best practices, I think, are just what we're trying to do now, which is stepping back and looking at holistically and trying to figure out how do we work with everybody across the ecosystem and know that at the end of the day, everybody's trying to solve for the same thing, which is how are we most conscious of the resources and the constraints that exist in the current system, but more importantly, how do we help patients and their families get access to the latest breakthrough innovations? And if that's the mandate and if that's the challenge that we have in front of us, then whatever technology that is, you know, now with radioligand therapies or the next generation of things that come in the future, the question becomes, how can we flex, adapt, work across the ecosystem to bring these therapies to market? But a lot of lessons learned with cell and gene therapies, and I'm sure there'll be lessons learned with radioligand therapies. But as we've talked over the last 10 minutes or so, nuclear medicine and radiopharmaceuticals, it's such a unique space. And there's hundreds of thousands of Australians that are facing prostate cancer right now. And so the urgency is on all of us to not let these constraints get in the way and to work across the ecosystem together to find new solutions.
That's a wonderful point to end on. We've been talking to Matt Zeller. He's the country president for Novartis Australia and New Zealand. Matt, thank you so much for coming onto the podcast to share the vision that Novartis has for the emerging radiopharmaceuticals sector in Australia and beyond.
Thanks for the opportunity, Caroline. Exciting times ahead.
It's great to welcome Stephanie Morris. Stephanie is the investment manager at Artesian, which is an investment management firm that specializes in technology-based venture capital and alternative investment strategies. Artesian also managed the $50 million South Australian Venture Fund, and Stephanie's been a member of the team there since 2023, and interestingly enough, was part of the MTP Connect team as Director of Innovation and Translation. And prior to that, she also spent 4 years at the Imperial College London as Director of Industry Partnerships and Commercialization Medicine. It's great to have you on the podcast, Stephanie, bringing your deep experience in commercialization, but also how that whole sort of funding side and investment in new medicines. So welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Caro, and thank you, Dana, for having me today. Really pleased to have the opportunity to talk about radiopharmaceuticals with you both. And I'll start by talking a little bit about Artesian, which will explain what I do in my day-to-day role. So we are an alternative investment manager investing in remarkable startups developing transformational technology to address global critical challenges. We are one of the Asia Pacific's most active early stage VCs. We've got a total of $1.2 billion assets under management across our venture capital business, as well as our fixed income business. In venture capital, our verticals of interest are health and medical technologies, climate and clean tech, agri-food sustainability, and AI robotics. That accounts for about 50% of our activity, and the rest is tech agnostic. So we've got good flexibility to invest in a wide variety of opportunities. We've got a strong focus on emerging leaders as well and gender equality, having recently launched one of the first female-focused investment funds in Australia. So that's really important to us as an organisation. Our focus is on early stage companies. Our sweet spot is seed to series B. But interestingly, you've already introduced the South Australian Venture Capital Fund. One of our points of difference from other venture capital funds is our venture capital as a service, or VCAS as we call it, where we can manage all or part of the venture investment activities on behalf of third parties such as corporates and governments. Which brings me to the SAVC Fund. It's $50 million of South Australian government's capital that we're managing on their behalf, which is dedicated to supporting startups in this state. So we're backing exciting high growth companies that have created hundreds of high tech jobs in Adelaide so far, and always on the lookout for more.
Wow. Well, that's a really interesting place to start, I guess, looking for more. And this is what this is all about. We're looking at the opportunity for developing radiopharmaceuticals sector in Australia, and particularly in South Australia. Stephanie, what do you see out there as the global market opportunity for the radiopharmaceuticals industry?
It's a really interesting global market opportunity. It's poised for significant growth. At the moment, its value, reports are saying, is around $6 billion, and this is only expected to grow rapidly over the coming years. They've predicted a 10% annual growth rate to reach a value by 2032, so not all that far away, of over $13 billion. So it's a pretty sizable market that's continuing to grow and grow and grow.
And what do you think is driving that growth?
Radiopharmaceuticals as a therapeutic is relatively new. It's a new field offering more precise and more effective treatment options with fewer side effects than perhaps other traditional therapies offer for those living with certain types of cancer. And I think this is really exciting for everyone. We're seeing more radiopharmaceutical therapies being developed by companies and more investment going into these companies to help efficiently progress their therapeutic candidates to market where they're needed. Again, looking at market reports, we're seeing in the US alone, the recent radiopharmaceutical-focused VC deals have remarkably increased. I read a report recently that that increase is to the tune of 550% over the past 5 years at 2020 to 2023. And the US-based companies have reported to secure $1.2 billion venture financing. So this is a pretty good signal that there's strong confidence in this sector globally and a strong appetite for investment.
And what's the appetite for investment here in Australia?
Yeah, it's it reflects what's happening around the world. So when we look at the global trends that we've seen over past years, a lot of merger and acquisition activity and growing. Novartis really kicked that off early on with some early buys, most notably with Endocyte, giving them the lutetium product that ultimately led to their flagship radiopharmaceutical Pluvicto. But others are getting involved quite quickly as well. A couple of years after Pluvicto, Bayer launched their first targeted alpha therapy, the first one for the market, Xofigo. Around the same time, DBO Pharm also signed an exclusive license deal with 3B Pharma for a preclinical radioligand program. And this has only increased. You've seen Ratio Therapeutics launch with over 20 million seed funding a couple of years ago. Raise Bio secured more recently 160 million Series D for their radiopharma portfolio. So a lot of M&A activity around the world. And domestically, we've seen just last week, and they've kicked off now, Clarity Pharma, which is actually one of Artesian's early investments, but they've since listed on the ASX, but they've just announced their $121 million equity raise. Telix, another ASX-listed radiopharma company, continues to progress in the clinic a novel compound, Apomab, that they license from SA's OzHealth. Advancell, a privately owned company, they're moving from strength to strength as well, progressing their product candidates through clinical evaluation. Securing both venture capital and non-dilutive grant funding along the way to support their activities. So there's a lot going on in this space nationally and internationally as well.
Steph, it must be so exciting. Even you mentioned Clarity as an example, that Artesian was an early investor, and now to see them just grow from strength to strength. What I'm interested in asking about is Australia and overseas. So some of these Australian companies are seeking investment from and investing overseas. Obviously, we want to keep them in Australia and create more jobs and for them to commercialize for Australians. What are your thoughts on that dynamic of investment in Australia and investment overseas for local companies?
You know, we've got a really strong competitive advantage here. Our research is second to none in Australia. And we've got some great infrastructure. I know you've already spoken with Eva Bezac, superstar researcher. We've got coupled that sort of research expertise with corporate expertise, NTECs, for example, who are really driving the way for radioisotope purification, isolation. You've got Mitru in Samri. They're doing a lot of the radioisotope manufacturing and compound manufacturing. Local health networks, their research hospitals, imaging facilities such as Crick at Samri, clinical trials infrastructure. There's a lot of reason to really support the local environment when it comes to radiopharmaceuticals. As I said, research is world leading. Our translation and commercialization ability is catching up as well. So there's a lot of merit, I think, to make sure that we really support this sector domestically. But it also does offer a lot of export potential and ability to attract the international attention too. So I do see there's a place for both, but absolutely, I think it's imperative that we do keep as much of that activity in Australia, because we do have such a unique advantage in this particular field that offers so much promise if we capitalize on it correctly.
It also made me think, when you were talking about researchers, think about some of the major funding programs in Australia. What are your thoughts on how radiopharmaceuticals is relevant to some of the major funding programs?
I think governments at both the state and federal levels have funding programs targeted at, amongst other things, innovation, advanced manufacturing, high-skilled job creation. I think there's good complementarity with the major funding programs at the moment. Of course, more funding is always welcomed. And what I'd really love to see personally is dedicated funding specifically for radiopharmaceutical development. And that's both from private and public sectors, so that we can really maximise the promise of the work being done in radiopharmaceuticals in Australia.
What could that look like, Steph?
I think, as I mentioned before, the research is great, very strong. Where perhaps we could really focus some of that funding is around the translation and commercialization space. We've got the infrastructure. We've got the we've actually got the bookend of that chain as well. We've got the innovative companies like BHP looking at raw source materials, through to strong partnerships with multinational pharmaceuticals such as Novartis, really leading the field in this space. So I think really strengthening the supply chain, but maybe as a precursor to that, making sure that good quality candidates, product candidates, are coming out of those research institutes and into that commercialization pathway. So dare I say, addressing that infamous valley of death, but I think that's really where some targeted funding would go a long way, supporting those, the development, early stage development of those potential clinical assets.
Excellent. Targeted funding with existing funding programs, and who knows, there may be a new fund that is focused squarely in this space. Let's hope.
That'd be great to see.
Steph, you've talked about a lot about the global market opportunity, why the investment is flowing a lot in this space. You've talked about the unique South Australian ecosystem. What are you most excited about when it comes to radiopharmaceuticals?
That's a hard question, Dana. I'm excited about a lot of it. Do you know what I'm probably most excited about, though, is the leading position that South Australia and Australia can play uniquely in driving and transforming the promise of radiopharmaceuticals. Our competitive advantage here is so strong. And when we think about the impact that we can make on this market globally, but perhaps more importantly, the impact we can make on people lives who are living with cancer and the prospect of new superior treatment options over what is currently available, that's incredibly exciting for me.
We've just been talking with Stephanie Morris, the investment manager at Artesian, an investment management firm, about the global market opportunity for radiopharmaceuticals, where the money is being invested, and what we need to do in Australia to develop a growing radiopharmaceutical sector here. Thank you for joining us, Stephanie. It's been great to have you on the podcast.
Thanks so much. I really enjoyed speaking with you today. Appreciate the opportunity.
I'm Judy Halliday. I'm the Director for Innovation and Entrepreneurship in the South Australian State Government. I'm in the Department for Industry, Innovation and Science, and so have kind of a broad policy and implementation responsibility from research translation all the way through startups and scale-ups, anything kind of entrepreneurial.
And so your background very much is in this space, entrepreneurship, innovation. Mm-hmm. You're an inventor, you're a founder, an investor, an academic, as well as an industry professional in the private and public sector. So you've sort of seen it all. Mm-hmm. What aspects of the radiopharmaceutical industry development do you think play into South Australia's strengths? And, you know, what's the opportunity here, and why South Australia?
Well, I think there's quite a few different opportunities. I think it depends kind of which frame of reference you want to use in considering that. You know, South Australia is big enough but small enough. There's lots of really high quality research. There's existing an installed base of infrastructure, if you like, in terms of SAMRI, MITRU and things like that, you know, nuclear physics and those sorts of things at the universities, really well kind of established and well functioning early clinical trial ecosystem and system of businesses. From the point of view of radiopharmaceuticals, obviously mining industry, critical minerals, very big in South Australia. And the other thing that's kind of interesting is our geographical location in kind of the middle of Australia rather than on either edge, and still quite close to Asia Pacific and our neighbours, given that, you know, radiopharmaceuticals are often very short lasting isotopes. So if you wanted to start making them and using them, you need to have them relatively close to where you're going to be delivering them. The other thing that's kind of interesting at this point in time, I think, in our history, if you like, is the, you know, the oncoming AUKUS nuclear submarines and that whole nuclear physics, nuclear infrastructure that will be requiring lots of capability and capacity. And so whilst that's not specifically radiopharmaceuticals, that's all very much the infrastructure that sort of sits around radiopharmaceuticals too, to a certain extent.
Looking at this kind of startup world, and you've been a non-executive director of about 7 startup companies,
mm-hmm.
and you're also delivering the startup hub at Lot 14 for South Australia. Yep. How do you think the radiopharmaceuticals industry development opportunity aligns to priorities of the state or the policy sort of more broadly? Like you were talking about the submarine work, that type of thing. How do you sort of see that sort of connection with that sort of whole startup industry?
So there's very much a focus on creating, if you like, an enabling environment for startups and innovation and those sorts of things. I think there's a good understanding, not just here, but probably globally, but certainly in Australia, our need to kind of innovate, to develop those new and interesting businesses, products and services to kind of fill what's been called the missing middle of our industry complexity or industrial complexity. And radiopharmaceuticals are kind of starting to come off the base of being those things that were not very commonly used, more diagnostics. Now with a better understanding of biology and better tools that we have for targeting, the utility of these short-acting high-energy isotopes that you can find and the ability to get them to where you need to use them for a therapeutic benefit's really coming off a pretty low base, to be honest, I think. And so there's a real interest in that, not just from the therapy point of view, but also from the diagnostic point of view. So lots of opportunities there. And therefore, you know, lots of those kinds of opportunities start off in the hands of startup companies where people can take a little bit more risk and get a little bit of risk capital involved and do a bit of that early testing and early development before they go into much larger, usually multinational pharmaceutical companies generally. But so I think all of those things kind of line up with building that kind of innovative base in South Australia, using what are our current capability and capacity and building on that and looking for things where there is that kind of spillover benefit that we talked a little bit about in terms of, you know, nuclear physics and AUKUS.
Judy, you mentioned creating an enabling environment for the startup ecosystem to thrive. Mm-hmm. What are specifically some of the programs and initiatives that state government has to support that ecosystem?
Well, we've mentioned the startup hub, but that's, you know, one physical, I guess, embodiment. There's all of the things that have been developed at SAMRI is a good example. A whole lot of that development along North Terrace that the universities have put in place. So lots of infrastructure, which is code for buildings, and therefore the people that fill up those buildings in that right kind of really interesting but very challenging, complex medical technology space. The other things that the government has done, I guess, is provided funding and support for the Adelaide Intermediary Program, which is managed by MTP Connect, which is explicitly focused on biomedical technologies to provide that kind of connector infrastructure, which is critical if you're going to get all the right people in these complex systems together at the right time to go from, you know, an idea to delivering a product or service. Other things that the state government has in place include, you know, ongoing support for a number of different CRCs and ARC centres of excellence. We have a grant funding program for early stage startups. The South Australian government's established the South Australian Venture Capital Fund for slightly later stage startups. So there's quite a few different pieces of a puzzle, if you think of the whole system as that puzzle picture, that are in place that the government's kind of put there. Other things, for example, are the program that we've got for industry doctoral training in place at the moment for quantum and for biomanufacturing, but biomanufacturing is in of itself quite closely related to radiopharmaceuticals. So, you know, lots of different levers that the state government has implemented over a number of years, which are complementary to things that happen at a Commonwealth government level generally.
Thanks for that. And we certainly at the Adelaide Intermediary Program, we love connecting people to the relevant programs, initiatives, and sometimes our job is to unearth what these opportunities are. So it's great that there are so many things.
Well, there are lots of opportunities and it does tend to be a moving feast. So it's one of the complexities of a complex system is all of the different pieces that you have to stitch together in order to get a positive outcome, particularly for the early stage stuff.
Speaking of early stage, when you think about the first mover advantage in radiopharmaceuticals, how do you think South Australia can take advantage of being a first mover as this industry develops?
I think having that kind of connected end-to-end advantage to some extent is where the opportunity is. I mean, you know, if you're looking for early stage clinical trial activity, and South Australia is a great place to start because there's good infrastructure there. And if you need to test, you know, your products and services, as you always do, those early studies are critical. There's lots of other supporting infrastructure for those sorts of things around, you know, NCRIS facilities and universities and everything else. So there's a great opportunity here to get that very early product development work done in the clinical sense, I think.
You've spoken about so many different aspects of why this is exciting, from the development of the technology and how that's progressed over time to our unique capabilities and end-to-end capabilities in our ecosystem, to the programs. What excites you the most about this opportunity, Jude?
I think what excites me the most is the possibility of getting involved and establishing that foundation of what's an emerging kind of therapeutic modality, let's call it that perhaps, that provides potential for fantastic outcomes for patients, either through better diagnostics or through better treatment. I mean, I think that is always a really exciting opportunity. But it's also the things that it touches on, as we've talked about, you know, the radio nuclear physics and radiopharmaceuticals and radiochemistry and all of the things associated with AUKUS. That's also very important in the mining industry. And as you know, we've got quite a lot of stuff that we dig up here in South Australia, as with everywhere else in Australia, and it's good to be able to kind of value add to that stuff. I think it's a great opportunity, and I think that's a great report that has been done to look at this. It's rare that you get to be thinking about a whole industry from the beginning and to try and bring to bear all the bits of that very complex industry, because there are many players in this space in the complex supply chain. So it's interesting to be able to be part of that kind of conversation early on, because this is an opportunity to think really carefully about what might be and then, you know, start with a good start rather than come backwards, look forwards rather than have to look backwards, I think.
Thanks to Dr. Judy Halliday for joining the podcast. She's the Director of Innovation and Entrepreneurship in the Department for Industry, Innovation and Science in South Australia. We've been discussing Minds to Medicines, the radiopharmaceuticals opportunity for Australia. The Minds to Medicine report was prepared by MTP Connect and has been supported by the following organisations: the Department of Trade and Investment, the Government of South Australia, AusHealth, Novartis, and Think and Act Differently, powered by BHP. So thanks for listening to the MTP podcast. If you like the show, please subscribe or give us a rating. It really helps others find our podcast. Until next time.